Okay, good morning, everyone. My name is Kathy Kambick, if you don't know me. And the subject that we're going to discuss today is loving widows and widowers. I became a widow when my husband died 6 years ago, and we had been married for a long time. We had dated for a long time, so it was a pretty big loss. And first thing I'm going to do is go through some statistics. According to the internet, there's 13.6 million widows in America, and I believe that should be widows and widowers. Every year, 700,000 become widows. In 2018, the statistics were 11.69 million widows and 3.41 million widowers. So you can see there's a big difference between the number of women that are widows and men. It's about 4 to 1. Worldwide, 258 million and half live in poverty. American women see a 37% decline in household incomes when a spouse dies. The median income for women over 65 is about $17,000 a year. Now, according to the Holmes Raw Stress Inventory, which categorizes the potentially negative effects of life events on a scale of 1 to 100, number 1 at 100 is death of a spouse. Number 2 at 73 is divorce. So it can be a really difficult time to get through. But God has heart for widows, and there's over 100 references in the Bible to widows. And I'm just going to read three of them. The first one, Exodus 22:22. Do not take advantage of the widow or fatherless. And then on the next page at the very top, Deuteronomy 24:19. When you are harvesting in your field and overlook a sheaf, do not go back to get it. Leave it for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. Okay, and the last one is in the New Testament, and it's at the very bottom, and it's James 1:27, which I'm sure you've all heard this one. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress and keep oneself from being polluted by the world. Okay. So today I have four of my fellow widows here, and I'm just going to ask some questions, and we're going to discuss it. And if anybody has any comment or would like to answer the question from the audience, that's fine too, but we'll take turns with our ladies. And first thing I'd like to ask is for you to tell us your name and when your spouse died. So we'll start with Selene.
Okay. Well, that's my name, Selene Jerdine. And my husband, Warren, died 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, in December on the 20th.
Okay. And everybody knows me.
So she thinks.
Sure. New people.
Because I've been here 54 years. But anyhow, my name is Margie Gizio, and my husband passed away August the 1st, 2018, and we were married about 64 years when he passed away. Can you hear me, Joe?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, Joe, if you can't, we'll give you a seat up here.
You can sit in front of us.
Yeah. You can feel free to move your seat up.
Yeah, you can start.
Yeah. Okay, Kathy?
My name is Kathy Klein. Jeff passed September 29th of 2010, and we would have been married 25 years when he passed.
My name is Carol Watkins. Lou passed away October 14th, 2017. We were married 65 years.
Thank you.
Talk louder.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Joe knows who you are, I think. Huh? I think Joe knows who you are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. We were married almost 40 years.
Thank you. Okay, so my question is, what surprised you about being a widow or widower? What surprised me was I saw a lot less, I saw less often my married friends. They would do things with other couples. They would do things with me, but it was really spread out, like occasionally. And I kind of missed their friendship. The other thing that really surprised me was after my husband died, I had such a peace from God. Even though I would be lonely, I felt like I was never alone. I always felt like God was with me. I think it's such a comfort being a Christian when you lose a spouse. Okay, so the question, yes.
Did you tell people when your husband died?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Everybody else did, but...
6 years ago, 2014, I believe it was, yeah. So, and we were married like 23 years, but we had dated for 7, so we had been together for like 30 years. So, what surprised you about being a widow? Anybody want to answer that one? That you weren't expecting? Selene?
Well, yeah, let me think about it.
Okay, well then we'll go to Margie.
Okay, you had mentioned about your friends, your married friends, mm-hmm. suddenly, you know, weren't asking you out too much. Well, I didn't experience that, but what did surprise me was all the love that was shown me by all my friends here at church, how they came alongside me and gave me attention. Yeah, that really surprised me because I was sort of a quiet person before, but anyhow.
You mean we brought this all out of you?
Beg your pardon?
We brought this all out of you? Was that
yeah, definitely.
Turned you into the person you are today. Kathy, you want to contribute?
One of the things that surprised me was, even though Jeff and I were separated, it was still incredibly raw and painful. Mm-hmm. I kind of in my mind thought that I had already grieved our relationship, but I had not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Carol, do you want to say anything?
Actually, what surprised me is, like you said, you see less of your friends, the married friends. After a while, they just sort of exclude you, or maybe once in a blue moon, they may, you know, include you in something. But as far as about being a widow, I the first year I was altogether different than most people that grieve, because I didn't grieve the first year for some reason. It just didn't hit me until this past year on his anniversary in October. From then on, it's really, you know, it's been tough, and the holidays coming up, you know, have made it tougher. And you know, the church has really been behind me, and the friends here have been very nice. So
could I ask a question? Do you think that has something to do with the fact that you were his caregiver in a lot of ways?
Oh, I was totally his caregiver.
And so maybe,
for
you
5 years.
That had an influence on how you grieved and when you grieved.
Yeah, because I had it for 5 years, and it got tough as the years got closer, you know, because it was just, I mean, he just had to be beside me 24/7. If I wanted to go out to the porch, he was right behind me, you know. And if we'd go out, he'd want to go, and we'd get there, and he'd say, let's go home, you know. He was, you know, and go to the grocery store, and I'd lose him. So then somebody would page me. Did you lose him? I got paged at ShopRite.
I think if you were the caregiver for your spouse, it does affect you a little differently than if your spouse died all of a sudden. I know I cared for Mark for about a year, and one of the things is I felt like I knew about it all that time that he was dying. I didn't really accept it, but I knew about it. And I think that helped me when he did pass to grieve about it.
Well, both Kathy's husband and my husband had the same diagnosis, which was a terminal brain tumor. And you know that it's only a matter of months before they die. But then if you choose treatment, you know, you're on the road to, what do you call it? Like,
well, recovery,
treating,
hopefully.
Treating, yeah. And so you're all immersed in, you know, whatever treatment to help them, and but you don't know how long, you know, they'll live. So, and then all of a sudden, it, you know, the treatment isn't working, so then you make a sharp turn to, you know, okay, we're no longer treating, we're back to, you know, the reality. Yeah, after Warren died, I same as Margie, I had so many people loving me and supporting me, and the church was such a support for me. And I found that I couldn't really talk about Warren's death. I just, because it would just bring up so many emotions. So that took a while. And then Sue does Grief Share, and that was helpful. And Carol and I were in there at the same time. And then I found that I was spending time connecting with acquaintances and friends to kind of build my new support group after my husband had died. So, yeah.
Okay, this is something that one of... Oh, go ahead.
I have something different to say from what she said, how you couldn't talk about after...
Yeah.
No, I just love talking about my husband. I talked about him all the time to whoever would listen. I still do. Yeah, I still do. And I find, I don't know, it's like he's always with me. And I love talking about him. And things come up that I remember he used to do. I mean, every time I go shopping, oh, yeah, he liked this. And, yeah, it's just... Anyhow, that's me.
Yeah.
So we all
that's
grieve
good.
A little bit
yeah,
differently.
That's an important point.
We have different experiences. Different. Mm-hmm. Our husbands, you know, had a different death in that, you know, maybe they died by accident or they were sick for a long time. So it really does change everybody's experience. Okay, this is something that one of our widows had asked me. What was the first night after your spouse died like? Was it hard to sleep without him or her? Somebody want to answer that question?
I have an answer. You want to answer?
They'd all been away in nursing homes, everyone, or in a hospital, right? Everyone?
Yeah.
Oh, my husband died in my house.
But you're the one person.
Yeah. He went through radiation and chemo, and then when they couldn't do any more, they said, you know, take him home, he's going to die. And so we got, you know, a hospital bed, and that was just wonderful. That was wonderful. He was there, we were together, and Chris was there, so it was great.
Well, anyhow, what was the first night like? Well, Dom was in a nursing facility, so technically it will be 3 years this February since I have been alone. Normally, I never liked nighttime, and when it first happened, I locked all the doors securely. I locked my bedroom door securely. I had night lights on and did that for a little while. And then I decided, okay, I'm going to put that door wide open at night. The bedroom door is wide open. I'm going to trust the Lord. And I repeated a lot of the Psalms where David said, I will lie down in peace and sleep, and the Lord sustained me. And so ever since, I haven't had any problem.
Yeah. Yes, Bob.
May I respond to that question?
You may.
My wife Martha died about 5 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon in our bed, in the bedroom. Uh-huh. And the funeral director came about 7:30 at night and took the body and so forth and so on. And when it was time to go to bed, I wondered, do I really want to even stay in that room? Mm-hmm. But I did, but I slept on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, that must have been hard. Mm. Okay. What chores, responsibilities was your spouse responsible for that you had to take over? Could have been finances, house repairs, yard work. What did you find that all of a sudden you weren't maybe prepared?
Lou used to empty the dishwasher for me, and I hate the dishwasher. I don't mind putting it in, taking it out. You can sit there for now. It's terrible. But
that's my son's job, and he hates
it. Empty it every time and put the dishes away, do all that. I would go downstairs with the wash, do the wash downstairs. He would bring the clothes up the two stairs, take them upstairs for me after they were clean. And occasionally he would go to the store, but I liked going to the store. And yard work, he couldn't stand a daisy in the yard. If he saw one daisy pop up, he was out there with his doohickey popping that daisy out. Well, if he would see the daisies in the yard now, he's probably flipping.
Now it's your yard.
Those are the things that I didn't have a problem with the finances because I did that. House repairs, he couldn't hammer a nail in the wall. I usually did that most of the time, and or somebody would help if it was major. Yeah.
One of the things that surprised me that really aggravated me was I had to do like the shoveling and scraping the ice off the car after a bad snowstorm. Jeff loved the snow and was an early bird, so he always got out there. Everything was always done, and when we lived in Upper Darby, the two of us had fun doing the back alley for all the neighbors. So I think that's where it stems from. It kind of comes back from what we used to do together. But when I first moved and it first snowed and I'm scraping that off the car and I had an attitude and I really had to pray through that.
Get you off the ice off.
I know what you mean.
That's really did. Yeah.
Did
really
you get part of the windshield off too?
I learned to warm up the car really early, not to think about the gas or anything, so that it's a much softer, but still happened to shovel the car out. Yeah. Like, it's still a pain.
Yeah. So that's my experience. And changing a light bulb. I was not happy to have to change a light bulb in the ceiling. So.
He was tall.
Two that need to be done right now.
Yeah. I had to go find the step stool and climb up there and take the globe thing off. And so with each first experience, I would cry. Mm-hmm. But then after that, I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. onward. Yeah. So, and then finances. Still working on that one.
Well, I'm not a crier. I wish I could cry. I have never been able to cry since I was a kid. My mom used to spank me and say, "Don't you dare cry." So I have never been able to cry.
Is that where it comes from?
I've never been able to cry. I didn't cry when my husband passed away.
Yeah. We'll go have a good cry sometime. Yeah.
But, okay.
What has been the most difficult part about being a widow or a widower, if anybody else wants to answer that one?
I don't know if it's the most difficult, but it is at the top. One of the top of the list is there is no person. You don't have your person. Like, yes. You guys that are married have somebody to bounce things off of, mm-hmm. when there's major decisions, when something happens that you're excited and you want to share, or when it's hard, it's just that it's difficult. Like, I've learned to be comfortable with sharing things that I would have normally only shared with my spouse. Yeah. You know, I mean, you have to be careful, but like, no person. I don't know how else to say that.
Yeah.
That's a good answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to bounce everything off of Mark.
Yeah.
So, I kind of missed
myself.
That. You're talking. Way to handle it.
The only other way I could describe it is when they're gone and you don't have a person, it feels like an amputation. That's the best way I could describe it. And people don't always understand that.
Well, I was the oldest of five children, so I was always independent. And even after marriage, I still was more or less independent and made a lot of my own decisions. Of course, if Dom agreed with it, but yeah, I liked being independent and making my own way. And I took over a lot of responsibility in the home because Dominic had the business and he worked long hours. So I was the one at home all the time with the four children and helping with the homework and anything else that had to be done. Yeah.
Yeah, just being one person instead of having a
solo
team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then it's great to have other single friends, you know, to get together with. So kind of opened up a new world.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be positive about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we try to help each other up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're there for each other.
Be there. Yeah.
Yeah, I will say that God does supply. Like if you reach out, there are people. Like I don't have my person, but I have people. And one of the things that I have learned and I'm still learning is people don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. So it is also our responsibility when to pick up the phone and say mm-hmm. or share. Mm-hmm. So and it's not an easy thing to do.
No. And probably a hard lesson to learn.
It is a hard lesson mm-hmm. to learn, and Jeff's been gone since 2010, and I am still learning it.
Yeah. Well, I never was a sharer. Hmm? I never was a sharer
yeah.
about talking about things.
To
somebody else. Yeah.
It's easier
yeah.
to share with a widow or a widower because they know where you're coming from, mm-hmm. whereas somebody that hasn't lost somebody, mm-hmm. it's sort of harder to talk or even talk to somebody that's younger. Mm-hmm. That you can't talk about married things that
right, yeah.
you know that you want to share, but then you feel it's too personal. You can't do that, so you talk to yourself.
Talk to God. That's what I
do. Well, that's what I do, and heaven knows He's gotten me through these 2 years. Yeah. Without Him, I don't know.
Right.
Okay. Sometimes while we are going through grief, we are going through other life changes. Like, for example, becoming empty nesters when our kids move out, yeah. or having to move because of the expense of owning a home. Does anyone want to address that?
That's really hard because I'm in the midst of the transition right now because Cindy just moved out on her own the beginning
of
November.
Did she go? Okay.
Oh, yeah. My.
So, yeah, so this is like...
And you two were particularly close.
Why don't you explain people so they know what the situation was with Cindy?
Cindy and I have been a team for forever, and we've had a very, very tight and different bond and relationship because of her health and going through everything with Jeff. And I will say that the transition and decision for her to move out was hard on her because she was feeling the responsibility of leaving Mom alone. Mm-hmm. That was a very hard conversation to have with her, that whether I thought about it, because I never processed. I knew, but I never processed. Like, there's so many different stages of grief and widowhood. Like when she moved out and we had everybody there, and then everybody left and I was there at the apartment like, oh,
this
me.
Is what it's like.
Yeah, this is me, by myself, and she's not here. But I knew the reality. I knew that God had purposed this time, but I really had to wrestle through that with Him. Like, I really did. I had to wrestle through that with Him, and I was hurting for her because I did not want my daughter to take on that responsibility. So we had that conversation that God knew this way before we even existed. God had a purpose and knew that at 25, Cindy Klein was going to move out and that I would be here. So that's a hard lesson. That's a hard transition.
Is.
Thanks for listening.
And this is kind of like group therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of have similar in that I don't have much family and my sons aren't particularly close. So, but I have my girl pals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, the question was, sometimes while we are going through grief, we are going through other life changes. Mm-hmm. Well, my life change was getting older, because I'm getting older every day, and I was older. Dom and I were both 87 when he passed away. So now, when you live alone, you're concerned sometimes, okay, I got all the doors locked. Mm-hmm. If I should die of a heart attack tonight, how are my kids going to get in?
Yeah.
So I sort of solved that problem. They can get in through my garage, an automatic garage door opener. So then the next door, which I always kept locked, I leave it unlocked now. So they can get in through the garage, and I told them all the other doors after the garage, the steel door and that, and then the other door, wooden door, they're both unlocked now. So that was about the only concern about getting older, that, yeah. Okay, something happens when you're alone. I say, what do I do first? Mm-hmm. So.
And at this point, how do you feel about staying in your home and what your future is?
I
know the answer to this, but you tell everybody.
That's cheating.
Well, technically, I've lived there 54 years, and we built a house together, and the four children grew up there. So unless God takes me, I intend to stay there as long as the money doesn't run out. So far, it's okay, to be blunt. So I just trust God a day at a time, just like when he was in the nursing facility. People said, it's so expensive. What's going to happen? Are you going to run out of money? I said, well, I'm just living one day at a time, one day at a time. And God knows, whatever happens when it happens, then I'll make the decision with my children. But God had a plan, and before I ran out of money, Dom was up in heaven. And I says, thank you, God. I mean, God, he was in it all. And I just praise the Lord, because he's been with me since the day I was born, which I was supposed to have died at birth because of whatever happened at birth. We were always born at home in my day. And literally, I almost died at birth, and here I am at 88, I'm still living. So God has a plan, and I just, since Dom has passed away, I know this isn't the time to give a testimony, I guess, but since Dom has passed away, I have much more time to spend reading the Word of God and praying and thinking of other people and praying for them, which I didn't have that time before. And I have found that through
Probably
this...
the Good News Club.
Yeah. She got me to go back to the Good News Club after 5 years. So I don't do that much. I listen to the kids say their Bible verses, really.
Oh, that's a big help.
And so that's about it. I lost my train of thought now.
It's okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Kathy? Yes.
That you have
in a way, this what I've been hearing up here with the women is kind of what Mark said this morning about, he was talking about the three different levels and talking about people in the church, different groups of people, different age groups of people and things like that, and how so many we don't share. And I remember for me, I love to talk to the younger ages. I love to listen to the older ages and hear how it used to be or hear what it is now or things like that. I know as a kid, I used to love to go and visit with my grandmother when I was a little girl and she had the farm and hear the stories of, you know, the way things were then or what it was like when she was growing up, what the going to church was like then, or, you know, what she was like growing up in the church. And I know a lot of people didn't know that that was a hymn that we sang this morning, but for me, remembering what it meant or to understand what it meant and things like that. But the whole idea of sharing and learning, and one thing that's always been important to me was the idea of mentoring. And it took a long time to find someone here to be connected to like that. And how important that is, I think, within our churches and our believers and those growing up and those teaching.
Yes, and I think the Bible tells us that the older women mm-hmm. should, you know, teach the younger women, and mm-hmm. the older men should yes. teach the younger men. Mm-hmm. That's something it tells us to do. Mm-hmm. So, okay, who do we turn to, and how do we go about making major decisions? And one of the examples somebody gave was a car purchase.
I usually talk it over with myself. First, and then I go.
Mine didn't go so well when we talked.
and then I went to my daughters, and that was for any major thing. And I'd gotten in problem with finances, before Lou died, and so my daughter took over everything. She says, "Mom, I'm doing all your bills and everything." And I says, "Well, what am I gonna spend? She says, "Well, we'll figure that out."
You get your allowance.
But she helped me get out of debt, mm-hmm. which was remarkable.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And because it was, I just went berserk with the charges. Mm-hmm. And so I rely on them for any, real major things that come up, because they're the ones that, of course, they don't know that the church is helping me with my back porch this week, and Joe and Vince are coming over Wednesday and tearing down the divider. But I haven't told the kids about that, though. This is a surprise to them. We've been trying to find somebody to do it, a carpenter or something, and nobody wants a small job.
Yeah.
And I thought, let me ask my deacon and see, what could be done. And through the church, they've helped me with a lot of things. They really have, and it's been great. But finance things, I go to my daughters and stuff, and buying stuff.
Anybody else?
Well, about making major decisions, how God always goes before. When I was in high school, I took the commercial course, which I had a lot of bookkeeping and that kind of thing. So naturally, I like numbers, and I was always very good at that. So I did all the finances, even when my husband was alive. He was real Italian. A lot of Italians give their spouses the check every week, which my husband did. And so I made all the decisions, paid all the bills, but then I would go over it with him and say, "This is what I did," so he knew. Mm-hmm. But I like doing that, and I still do that. Of course, my son, sometimes, he thinks he wants to take his dad's place, and I told him recently, I said, I'm still the mother.
I feel like the daughter.
Yes. But as far as making the major decisions, I really go to the Word of God and seek the Lord's help first, and then I'll talk to my children or my son afterward.
Well, I'm like, was it Carol?
Carol.
I'm a thinker, so I think about it and decide. Yeah. Sometimes I'll bounce it off somebody, but I rely on myself.
When I was saying to Carol that my just talking it over with myself didn't go so well, because I couldn't get past myself. Like, that's one of the ways that I'm continuing to learn to loss and to reach out, because people didn't know that I was lifting my hood and putting fluid in my car for a month before I drove it, because I didn't know how what the first step would be to go about purchasing a new car, nor how I couldn't put that together in my mind, how I would make the finances work or go. Like, I know that I can speak for myself. I know that there's certain things that I could do, but I was just kind of paralyzed in making that decision. And I loved that vehicle. I didn't want to let that vehicle go. So if I just put a little fluid in there, and
maybe it'll last another 10 years.
Until my cousin said, "I don't want you driving to Delaware anymore, and I need to get to Delaware to care for my mom." That's when I knew, like light bulb, that I just really prayed about who to reach out to. And I'm telling you, God in His awesomeness just. They called it my posse. I had a posse. The people that were there with me were so supportive and so helpful. Clayton Wilt, one of our deacons, was there. Paul Waxman and my daughter. Like, God had every one of them there that had each part under control of something that I would have overlooked. You know what I mean? Like, just so that's why I say the people don't know what they don't know. They have to reach out.
Well, I'm very dumb about cars. I know zero about a car. I just know how to turn the key, step on the gas, and go. And anything that happens to my car, I'm on the phone with my son. He takes care of my car. He gets inspected for me, all that kind of stuff. And so that's it about the car. How about you about the car?
Well, me and my mechanic. Take care of it.
Yeah. Since becoming a widow or a widower, describe ways people have been helpful to you.
People have been God's hands and feet and skin. Sometimes you need the skin. You just need somebody that is there and available. And when I have reached out for help, there has been no lack of help or availability or willingness. Like yesterday, we had to do a hard thing and clean out a storage unit that my children had for a couple of years. I made one phone call and there was a caravan, and it was really hard. That was a large portion of my past that I didn't know was still in existence. And God supplied the people that I needed, right up to Kim, the friend that knew the moment that I needed to step away and cry.
Yeah. I guess I ditto what Kathy said. Yeah. That people are just very connecting and helpful and God provides.
I think it's important for all of you to know that when people say that your church family is your family, we feel that in a much deeper way, right? And see that and need that.
Yeah, it's very true.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because mm-hmm. you can go to them for prayer. Mm-hmm. You can go to them for friendship. You know, and
go to them for nothing.
Yeah,
just sit there.
That's not nothing.
Right, that's what
that's
I mean.
Something
now.
That's very, very rich.
I agree with what she's saying. However, because I've always been independent, I don't like asking for help unless it's really necessary. And so the first people that I go to, God has really blessed me with a loving family, and I go to my family first. And then I have a wonderful next-door neighbor. They're of a different faith, but they have been so... We were friends for 54 years. They've lived there, too, 54 years.
Oh, wow.
So they actually... They try to beat me bringing up my trash can, and he'll do that for me. And also, they said any, and they meant it too. They said any time of the day or night that you need help, get on the phone. We'll be right there, and they have been. That's such a wonderful thing to have neighbors. I have actually all my neighbors. I have five neighbors around me, and I do have excellent neighbors, which is wonderful. A blessing from the Lord, really.
Mm-hmm. Is. Okay, well, my next question is, what kind of help would you like to receive from the church or other people? But before you answer me, I'm going to say that the church has been very supportive of me, that the middle school and high school kids come out every fall and rake my leaves. And the best part of that is that I have a yard full of young people running around, and I just love seeing them and seeing their faces. And then I make hot chocolate for them, and
That's nice.
We just have a little bit of fellowship there. But you know, I could rake the leaves myself or maybe get my son to do them, but I really enjoy having them all come over and shower me with that. Also, I've had some, I talked to my elder, and everyone should have an elder to go to. And, you know, he referred me to Joe Worrell, who is the deacon. And he helped me with some deck and roof repairs. I had something fall down off of my garage roof, and he helped me with that. So what I wanted to ask for was, Clayton, I guess you're our designated deacon. If you could give us an idea of what the church can help us with, then you women can then ask if you need more.
Okay. I've been a deacon since 1995, and I guess I got involved because I was looking for something to do. I was here since 87, and I was praying, you know, I'm just tired of sitting in the pew. I need to do something. I got elected to the deacon board. I've been there ever since. The reason I think I have a special place for widows in my heart is because I was raised by a widow. I was raised by my grandmother. My grandfather was killed in World War II, which feels familiar. My whole life it was just the two of us, and I saw what she went through. I know what it's like to be poor. It says your income goes down 37%. I don't know what her income was before, but living on my grandfather's very small insurance policy and his private government pension, we were poor. Okay, so. But we did get help from people outside of our family, and the family helped as much as they could, but we were poor. So as the deacon board, you've already mentioned some of the guys. Joe can fix anything in your house. He's been in my house.
He's amazing.
Yeah. there's stuff like I cannot pound a nail either. Okay, so you know, so if I need something fixed, I call Joe. If I need plumbing, I call Vince. Okay, for anything else, we discuss it as a board. And the thing that I would say as far as dealing with some of the widows or widowers here, they're all very strong. They're all very independent. They're all very self-sufficient. But every now and again, they just need something. There's just things that they don't know, or their family can't help them with, or things like that. They just need help, and that's where we don't have really a program to specifically keep track of what's going on. But we hear things. We keep our ears to the ground, and we get things through. Somebody will say something. We keep our eyes open, which for guys it's kind of hard because we mess a lot. We're oblivious to everything. But once we hear something, we act on it. We get involved. We do what we need to do. And it doesn't matter what it is. If you have a need, it doesn't matter. Bring it to us. Dave's a deacon, I'm a deacon, I think there's only two of us in here. Really doesn't matter what the issue is, what the need is. Somebody on our board can help. Like I said, Joe can do home repairs, Vince can do plumbing. Steve is more in tune with finances. Dan's a lawyer. Matt Pye and me and Dave, and I really don't know what our specialties are, if we have any. But, you know, one thing that we do is yeah, and master or not.
We have wives who listen.
And we have wives who listen.
And they now have some new deacons that we're
Not yet. But again, it really doesn't matter what the need is, bring it to us, okay? We'll figure out what to do with it. If it's, you know, something that you think is silly or whatever, doesn't matter. If you have a need, if you see that there's something that you just can't deal with or don't know how to deal with, one of us will figure something out for you. Okay?
Okay.
Basically, any questions?
Ladies, is there something you feel like you would like the church to do for you, or you think the church could do for you, or you would like to know if they could do it for you?
Can't think of anything else. I think it's great.
You talked about anything, but if people have a financial need, also, they can take that to the deacons, right?
No matter what the need, bring it to us.
I'll add something to what Clayton said. The deacons do help, but they do it very discreetly.
Yeah.
So if there's a need, they'll meet the need, and that's all there is. Nobody else will know.
Unless somebody tells.
The person that's helped may tell, but the deacons do not.
No.
I just wanted to say thank you.
We do not tell. But as I described it one time to my daughter. She was at college. I had to take something up, so we went out to lunch. And she says to me, what do deacons do? So, well, we somehow find out about a need. We get involved to the level that we need to be involved. And then after the need is taken care of, then we back out of it and go about our business, and everybody else does the same. And nobody knows that we're there. And she said, so you guys are Batman.
I like that.
I said kind of without the cool uniform and stuff. But, you know, we keep everything to ourselves. We talk about it amongst ourselves at our meetings and emails and things like that. But if you're involved with one of us and you have a need and you don't want it spread, don't worry about us. I know more stuff about people here, people at work, than it'll go to my grave with me. That's how we go about our business. So there's never a fear that we will spread your business to people that don't need to know. So,
just as an example, Kathy called up and said she needed her yard raked. We wouldn't just show up with all the high school kids and rake her yard. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd sit down and talk about how can we get this done, and somebody might say, oh, let's see if we can get the high school kids to do it, and that would probably work. And then we would ask Kathy, are you okay with us getting the high school kids and coming out and raking up your leaves? And of course, if she said, oh no, I wouldn't want that, then we just would think of something else. But and again, that's a simplistic answer, but that's how we approached things. We wouldn't just show up with three people from church to do something with you or for you without asking you first.
Yeah, so that we try to make everybody as comfortable as we can with what we're doing. And you know, like if you don't want the high school kids, you're going to get a bunch of us, and we're not getting any younger.
Not as fun as
you kids are so much fun.
Yeah. And they're probably rate better than we would. So.
Also, Clayton, I would assume that goes for people that are non-widows, too. There's other people in the church that, you know, could use a hand, yep, and they could contact you.
Right. Mm-hmm. But the topic here was widows, so
yeah, that's
so widows. But it goes to anybody. Anybody want what they need. If we can meet that need, we'll certainly meet the need. We've helped several families through the years that were not widows, but had a need. Really can't go into it because I said I wouldn't. But there's. I used to keep the records. How many people do you think we fell? Maybe 150, 200?
A lot of stuff has happened. It just happened.
Right. That's inside and outside the church. So, you don't need to be a widow or a widower. All you have to have is a need. And if you have a need, bring it to us. Bring it to your elder if you want to go through the elder. Scott's my elder and Mike's my other elder because I need two. So like if somebody in their elder group has a need, they'll bring it to us and we'll do what we do. So.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Kathy.
Yeah.
Is there a formal group for people that are widowers and widows?
No, there's not a formal group, but we've sort of made little groups of our own and become friends. But I don't know, that's something I think we'd have to discuss, is if we would want to somehow formalize it.
Yeah, for maybe people out here that are, you know,
like a support group.
You're all connected in some way, or will be connected.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, for more shyer people, maybe they don't share now, but maybe, you know.
I think that's something we should probably discuss.
Just to answer that question a little bit, there's a ladies program for Bible study. And I will tell you one thing, that those ladies stick together very, very closely.
Talking about the Wednesday class?
Yeah. And they sure take
care
of each other.
That's a very strong, strong group.
So if you're available Wednesdays, that's the place to go.
Yeah.
Well, I know, they all keep asking me to come, but I said I can't because Wednesday...
You're not old enough.
No. Oh, well, actually, Wednesday afternoon, we need people to pray. Marie, Joe, Pastor Taylor, and I, we have four people that come every Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock in this room to pray. And we have had nobody else decide to come and pray with us. So... if anybody who isn't working during the day, come out at 2 o'clock every Wednesday afternoon because that's where we meet for prayer. And we have a prayer list, so you don't have to worry, oh, what do I pray about? There's a prayer list that's typed up, and we take turns around the table praying for those different items. And Marie leads it.
Well, kind of. I guess I have since whatever. I have several comments. The
other
Sunday, it just came to my mind, and I knew you widows were going to be up here, and I thought, and I saw Sam Shields, and I said, you know, Sam, how are you doing?
Yeah.
And I thought, how often do we remember our widowers? Because we do have some of those folks around, and I think we need to not forget them. But I also talked to Mark and Brenda this morning. They're going over to visit Betty. She's been on my mind, Betty Hasty. I think she's been widowed maybe, what, about 10 years probably? And she's made the move to Jersey and all. And I said, how is she doing? I mean, what a change after all those years. And I think she was really ready to go. It was her choice of where to go. So it's just, I'm just so glad that she's there and that she's settled in. So that's a blessing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, ladies, what suggestions do you have for our audience as to how they can support you? And I would just say, I would just suggest to keep widows in mind so they don't become like on the outsides. Invite them for dinner in your home or invite them out to eat, or if you're having a get together, invite them. And if you're worried about, oh, maybe they're not ready to go out yet, they'll turn you down, you know? But, like, I mean, I think I was ready from day one just to be with other people, you know? The church was such a support for me.
I haven't gotten any invitations for dinner from anybody.
We'll start here.
Well, Margie, I'll give you a little hint. We don't do too many dinners at home, but we go out to eat a lot, a couple of us.
There you go.
And I'm going to add you to my list, okay?
I know you have called me before, but every time you call, I'm busy.
Well, what am I supposed to do about that?
There you go.
So maybe you're too busy to go out today.
You have had invites.
Yeah, from her.
So do you have any suggestions as to, other than what the deacon said, of what people can do to help out?
Two things. One is sometimes we truly don't know what we need. So if you know us and you love us and you might perceive a need, and maybe you could talk to us privately and ask, because like I shared with the car, I didn't even know where to begin. So if anybody had seen me lift my hood and had asked, mm-hmm. then I probably would have broke down crying and said, I don't know.
And so, that may happen.
Yeah, so sometimes we truly don't know. And then on the opposite end of that is helping is truly only helpful if it is perceived that way to the recipient. So some people try really hard to be really helpful, and they off the cuff, like, oh, Kathy has been so busy, I'm going to take her a meal and do her grocery shopping, but the meal and the grocery shopping was all stuff that I couldn't eat. You know what I mean? So I guess you have to try to know us and what our needs might be.
Ask.
Yeah.
Communicate. Some people don't like surprises.
Right.
You know, others do. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would just like to let you know that if you need your battery jumped and you can't find a guide, call into Bemis. I got a call from one of my sisters when I didn't have a battery, didn't know what to do, and she said, call Linda Bemis. She came and she jumped my car.
Is that your side job?
I still haven't learned to do that. I'm afraid to put those two things in.
I'd like to put a plug in for my in-laws. For years and years and years, my mother-in-law insisted upon having a little Christmas get-together for all the widows in church. And Rich and I would say, oh, she's doing it again, and it's so much work. Because toward the end, we got involved with it. And Nancy and I were serving, and it was fun. It was fun, but it was another night. But that was an awesome thing that she did. She would have Norma Journey over, and Elsie would come over, and Betty Hasty would come over.
And they
over.
Gave us so much food, you were stuffed.
She made little.
By the time I got done the little sandwiches, I couldn't eat anything else.
Little tea sandwiches and cookies, and it was just a nice gesture that Ida would always do. So that was always a sweet thing. I don't have time to do that, but I would love to do that.
I was going to suggest that.
What, and you're suggesting it? Maybe after the holidays.
Well, or I'm saying you can just do it one at a time. You know what I mean? Like you can just invite somebody. If you're going out in a group, say, what about so-and-so? And they can say no, but they could say yes. You know, that might be easier. And like I said, once in a while we do it at our house, but we just tend to go out to lunch or go out to dinner. So that's how we handle that. But on the back page is resources for widows and widowers. And we're very fortunate because we have a very good program here. It's called Grief Share, and Sue Bickle runs it. And this is the workbook that they use for the program. And I think it's 13 weeks, and I have down, it's Wednesday night in the fall and in fall, winter, and the winter, spring. And Sue Bickle, and her phone number's on here. And as part of this, here's some little cards if you know somebody, you know, that might need it. And also as part of that program, they have something called Surviving the Holidays. And it's going to be Wednesday, November 20th, which I think is this Wednesday, at 7 p.m. here, which would be in that little room, my other half of this room. But surviving the holidays, because holidays can be difficult. They trigger all kind of memories that we have. Now, when my father was dying, they sent somebody from hospice in. And hospice came in, but he died like 2 or 3 days later, so it didn't really help a lot for him. But they put me on their mailing list, and then every month for a year, they sent me this newsletter, which is called Journeys, and it was very helpful. And these are extra I've been through them all, so if anyone wants to take one or two. And then you can get a subscription, the information's on the back. Also, when I first became a widow, we didn't have the grief share group here. So I went over to the Lutheran church, and there was a woman named Polly Lang who was running the support group there. And she has since got her license or, you know, her degree, whatever she needed. And she is running, she has an office in Swarthmore. And she does do a grief group Tuesdays, but it's full right now. So she said that if anybody was interested, she could see them separately. And I guess when the group opened up, you could get into the group. And she takes some insurance, but not all. You'd have to talk to her about it. But this is more information. There's a phone number on there, but I guess that was her house phone number that I called. And here's her office phone number and a little bit of information about her. So if any of these things are helpful to you. And I attended the Grief Share program here. I actually went through it twice. I went through it once, and then I went through and I was sort of helping Sue with other people.
I went through it three times.
And you went through it.
Three times.
I went through it three times.
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't go through it at all.
Well, it's there. It is there.
I know.
If you need it. But does anybody have any questions or comments? I really appreciate your comments and your sharing. You're adding so much to, you know, the whole program.
I do want to say that I appreciate the church here. Being here for 54 years, I love the church here, and really, I like after church that you are in the gym and you can talk to your friends, because other than that, that really is my out for the week when I go into the gym and talk to everybody, and I really enjoy that. And I call my four kids. They know everything that's going on in this church. Everything. They know the people.
You're the newsletter to the family.
Right.
I just want to thank you so much. You really put it on my radar. Just in a little bit, we'll be what some needs are in our church, and just I so appreciate you reading this, Kathy, and opening all of our eyes just in a real sensitive way that the Lord would have. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's very kind.
I think Kathy did a great job.
She did.
Thank you so much. I think you all did a wonderful job too. Thank you, ladies, for sharing.
Yeah,
it's
Kathy's
not always
a hard
easy.
Worker.
She is.
Kathy
hey,
is.
Kathy, I have a thorough question. The grief share program itself, is that just like a workbook thing you work through?
It's 13 weeks long, and I mean, if you miss a week, it's okay. But they go through a chapter. They also have a video. And on the video, people talk about their experiences, all different types of people, you
okay,
know, men, women.
The reason I ask is my, I guess, uneducated perspective of that was I thought that was like a widow's group that you guys just all got together.
No.
Anybody.
Any
child, grandparents, anything.
And it can be the loss of, it doesn't have to be a spouse, it could be the loss of whatever,
right,
a son,
so
a daughter,
a
cat.
The reason I bring it up is why don't you guys organize a group that just lean on each other, you know, like instead of, I guess it's, they wouldn't be called the grief share, it would be
widowers,
you know, whatever you want to call it, but you know, you guys could organize a group like that where you all get together once a month, go out to dinner, you know, whatever you would all decide what you want to do would be what you would do, you know. If you feel like there's a need for you to have a group to plug into, this is this perfect spot to do it.
Yeah. I agree. The church has been very supportive.
Good suggestion.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy.
You're welcome.